I want to speak about Pinchas, what he did, and what his reward was. The Medrash says that, the Pasuk says, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen Heshivas Hamasi Mi'al B'nei Yisrael B'Kanoes Kinasi B'Solcham V'lo Chilisias B'nei Yisrael B'Kinasi. You don't have to write it, this is the beginning of the Sedra. That Pinchas took my anger away from the Jewish people. I didn't destroy them because he was zealous for my honor. Lachein emor, therefore say to him. So the rabbis pick up on those words, lachein emor, therefore say, that implies bedin hu sheyekabel scharo. It is justice. It is right, that he receive his reward. It's justly deserved. That's a good word. His reward is justly deserved. Now, what does that mean? All rewards are deserved, usually, if they're rewards. So why here does the Torah go out of its way to specifically say that what Pinchas is getting is justly deserved? Did hu sheyekabel scharo. In addition, it's a little difficult to see the connection between what Pinchas did and what his reward was. The first reward was Brisi Shalom, my covenant of peace. What did he do to get this covenant of peace? Murder two people. Usually peace is not secured by killing people. So why is Pinchas' reward Shalom, the covenant of peace? And the second reward was Bris Kehunas Olam, the covenant of Kahuna, of being a Kohen. Now a Kohen epitomizes Chesed, the absence of anything that is violent. A king is violent. A Kohen Gadol, the Kohen, is very peaceful people or whatever. They work in the Beis HaMikdash, which was called the building of peace. And according to the Zohar, the Kohanim are not even allowed to shech the animals that they sacrifice. Somebody else has to sacrifice it. According to Halacha, you don't need a Kohen to sacrifice, to slaughter a sacrificial animal. Anybody can do it, but a Kohen can do it too. According to the Zohar, it was preferable the Kohen didn't do it, because the Kohen comes from the Midah of Chesed, total kindness, and he's not the one to be involved in slaughtering. So again, Pinchas killed two people, and because of that, he gets Bris Kehunas Olam. He gets Brisi Shalom, the covenant of peace, and the covenant of Kahuna, of priesthood, and both of them seem to be the antithesis of what he did. So let me tell you what I think. First of all, let's understand the idea of Kina. Okay, Vayikane Lelokov. Now, Kina has positive connotations and negative connotations. The most simple negative connotation of Kina is jealousy. Being jealous of someone else is a Torah prohibition, Lo Sachmud. Don't covet what other people have. There is jealousy that is sanctioned and even positive. Kina Sofrim, Tar Bechachma. Jealousy of Torah, midos tovos, right, brings to a increase in wisdom and in good midos. Being jealous of other people's spiritual gains, that's a positive thing. We'll see in one second how it's positive and when it's positive. There's also another kind of kina, being jealous in a zealous way. Where do we find that? God is called a jealous God, or more a zealous. We'll see what zealous and jealous have to do with each other, except the fact that there's only one letter that separates them. We find that by idolatry. When it comes to punishing people for committing idolatry, it says God is a jealous God. Why? What's the idea? Another place we find this idea of jealousness in a positive way is if a man suspects his wife of committing adultery, And he just doesn't wake up one morning and, you know, have his suspicions. There's grounds for suspecting her, because it's talking about the following case. He sees that she is overly friendly with a certain man, and he warns her in front of witnesses, "I do not want you to be alone with this man." Now, he didn't have to warn her, because she's not allowed to be alone with any man who's not her husband. It's Torah prohibition. Right? But he warns her anyway. Okay? And he tells her, "I don't want you to transgress the Torah prohibition of being alone in a locked room with this man." She ignores her husband's warning, and she's alone in front of witnesses who are on the outside of the door, not inside. If they're inside, then she's not alone. So there are witnesses on the outside of the door who see her go into this hotel room with this man, lock the door, okay, and they're in there for a period of time. And the witnesses tell the husband, "Your wife was alone with this man." The wife claims they were playing checkers. The husband's not sure. So then she goes through the whole process of a sota, basically to exonerate her and to prove that she's innocent. Because she could say, "I'm not interested in going through this," and then the husband has to divorce her, and that's all. She doesn't get punished, she doesn't get killed, because we don't know. She claims she's innocent. We don't know. But there's enough of a grounds that if she doesn't want to go through the process, she can't remain married to this man. If she wants to remain married, she goes through the process. If she's really innocent, she drinks this water, it'd have no effect on her, and just the opposite. If she had trouble getting pregnant, or if she had hard pregnancies, everything will be fine for her. It'll make her better. If she is guilty, then Taka, the water will kill her in a miraculous way. That's the whole thing. So there the Torah says, Kina. Kine yasishto. He is jealous, warns his wife from a standpoint of jealousy or zealousy. So we find that by God punishing for Avodah Zarah, we find this kina, and by adultery, we find kina. What is the common denominator of all these things? Let's start with the following. The word kina with an aleph is very closely related to the word kane with a hey, which means to acquire. An acquisition is a kinyan. Everybody in this world has things that belong to them, that are in their domain. That's their rights to those things. And a person, that's called a kinyan. If somebody encroaches on someone else's domain and takes what is legally, rightfully theirs, then there's a place of kina, of being jealous in a very positive way of someone encroaching on my property, on my rights, on what belongs to me. Kina in its negative sense is where someone else has something that belongs to them, that's theirs, and I want it to be mine. So I want to acquire something that really, at somebody else's expense, that really doesn't belong to me, it belongs to them. Whatever it may be. It may be something that they have, or something that they are, or whatever it may be. So kina can be being jealous of someone who is taking away what rightfully belongs to you, or trying to take away something that rightfully belongs to someone else and make it yours. Same idea, just one's negative, one's positive. And therefore, kina applies very clearly to God when it comes to idolatry. Because we are God's portion in this world. God doesn't deal with us through intermediaries, which is the basis of idolatry. Worshipping intermediaries, powers that come between the person and God. And it's prohibited for us to worship idolatry, to worship any other powers. So we have to go directly to God. Because Chelek Hashem Amo, God deals with us directly. He didn't give us over into the hands of intermediaries, of other powers. So we're God's portion. And if we serve idolatry, then we are taking ourselves out of God's domain and putting ourselves into someone else's domain. And therefore, the reaction to that by God is jealousy. Because a jealousy in the positive sense, where something that is mine is being encroached upon by other things, right? Like the Jewish people are putting themselves in the hands of a different power when they are my lot and they don't belong in the hands of another power. And to teach us how terrible it is, God functions vis-a-vis us as a jealous God. Exactly the same thing with a husband and wife. Right? A wife is the domain of her husband. Right? There's a sacred bond between them. And if she desecrates that bond by living with another man, then the husband is very similar to the feeling God has when the Jewish people stray after strange gods, is the feeling a husband should have when his wife strays after strange women. Strange meaning not him. Strange men, I mean. Right? Not him. So, very similar, idolatry and adultery. One is on the spiritual plane, one's more on a physical plane. The Malbim, I think, points out that the Torah speaks about this kind of kina with different words following it. Sometimes it says lekanos bi, vatikane rochel bi achosa, with a base. Sometimes it says lekane es, to be jealous of, with the word es following. And sometimes it says lekane li, right? Hamekane atali. Moshe tells Yoshua when he complains that there are other prophets prophesying without the permission of Moshe. So Moshe says, are you jealous for me? I'd be happy if everybody was prophets, not my domain that they're taking something from me. There it says Hamekane atali with a lamed. And he explains where someone is jealous in a positive way. Rachel, Vatikanel Rachel Bachosa. Rachel was jealous of Leah's good deeds that enabled her to right away have children. So she wasn't trying to hurt Leah and take away what she had. She was trying to emulate Leah. She was jealous of her. I want that too. Not that I don't want her to have it. The negative kind of jealousy is I'm jealous of that person. I want to have what they have. And I'd be happy in one of two ways. Either I'll get it, or they'll lose it. That's negative jealousy. Positive jealousy is, I'm happy the person has what they have. I'd like it too. I wouldn't be happy if it was taken away from them, but I'd be very happy if I had it too. So therefore, I'm jealous of that person's good deeds or whatever. I'm very happy that they have what they have. But I'd like to have it too. I'd like to emulate them. That's called vatikane li. When you're jealous of the person and want to take it away from them, or be just as happy if they lost it, that's vatikane es. And when you're jealous for someone else's honor, you see somebody encroaching on someone else's domain, and you feel bad for that person, you're jealous for them, that's when it says vatikane li. Right? Vatikane be is the positive kind of jealousy. Vatikane es is the negative. Vatikane le is where you're doing it for someone else. You're championing someone else's cause. You're jealous for them. You see that something is being taken from their domain that shouldn't be taken. Okay, now, what does that have to do with being zealous? A kanoi, right? What's a good word for a kanoi? How do you translate kanoi into English?
Zealot.
A zealot. Okay. So I guess zealot. Whatever it means, a kanoi. It means a person who takes the law into his own hands sometimes in order to champion the cause of God in the world. which is a very dangerous thing if you're not doing it properly. What happened over here with Pinchas? The Jewish people are sinning two sins. One, Gilui Arayos, immorality. They are living with non-Jewish women, and they are serving idolatry. The non-Jewish women are bringing them to idolatry. Okay. And amidst all of this, a head of a tribe comes with a Midianite woman and publicly brings her into his tent and commits a sin with her. And now, halachically, if they would be brought to a court, except for the idolatry, a person who lives publicly, right, with a non-Jewish woman, okay, is not liable to a death penalty in the hands of man. He is liable to a spiritual death penalty. And the halacha is kanoim pogim bo. A zealot, if he really purely feels that zealousness, can kill the person. The mitzvah for him to kill him, okay, but it's not a halacha. Doesn't have to do it. It's only if he feels so zealous, then he does it. Yeah.
Did we learn that from Pinchas?
From Pinchas. Pinchas, no. Moshe taught this halacha. We learn it because it says by Pinchas, but the halacha was there before. Now the source of the halacha is Pinchas. But Pinchas, it says, Vayar Pinchas, last week's Edra, he saw. The Gemara says, what did he see? He saw what was happening, and he remembered the halacha that Moshe taught him. And everybody else forgot that halacha. Now, what is the idea? Here also, it says that where is God's presence in the world? Between husband and wife. A relationship between a husband and a wife, a Jewish husband, a Jewish wife, is a model for the relationship between man and God, between the Jewish people and God. The way that you physically have an understanding of that relationship that a person is supposed to have with God is the relationship between a husband and a wife. That's the physical relationship that patterns itself after the relationship of man with God. And we're like God's bride, God's wife, kibiyoch. That same relation. That's why God is a partner in that relationship. And that's why God's presence comes through that relationship. So when a Jew lives with a non-Jew, okay, he's taking that relationship and it's almost idolatrous. It's not just adulterous, it's idolatrous. Because it signifies the Jewish people going after a strange God. Because going after a Jewish woman, right, for a man is connecting to God. Connecting to a non-Jewish woman, a strange woman, is like going after strange gods. So idolatry and living with a non-Jewish woman are very, very connected. Okay, besides the fact that if somebody marries a non-Jewish woman, she's going to lead him to idolatry most of the time. So it's a practical thing too, but it's not just practical, it's a very symbolic kind of action. And therefore, Pinchas, so God is the one who has to be jealous over here. Okay? God is jealous, like we said, jealousy applies to idolatry. It applies on a physical sense to adultery. But here it applies doubly to God. Because here is a Jew who is not only committing idolatry, but he's also committing a sin that is symbolic of idolatry by connecting with a non-Jewish woman publicly. So it's a tremendous affront to God's honor and the whole purpose of the world. So God is the one who's going to have to avenge this jealousy. And therefore it's not in the hands of human beings. Idolatry itself may, yes, be in the hands of human beings, because it affects people, whatever. Here, it's something of such a high nature that it has both things in it, that it's out of the hands of human beings, in the hands of God. Someone who feels so close to God that he feels jealous for God. Right? Yeshua was Moshe's Talmud. So he was so connected to Moshe. He was so negated to Moshe that he felt what Moshe should have felt. Moshe should have felt jealous that there are other prophets without his permission prophesying. Yoshua felt it. Moshe didn't, because Moshe was a tremendous honor. But Yoshua felt what Moshe should have felt, because he was totally negated to him, totally connected to him. That's the same thing that Pinchas did. Pinchas felt what God felt. So now, it's no longer an earthly punishment. Pinchas is meeting out the spiritual heavenly punishment. Except he becomes God's agent. He automatically connected to God to a point where he became functioning in God's place. It's God's agent to avenge God's jealousy, which exists. The jealousy is there. It's part of creation. That something infringes on the domain of something, that's called jealousy. And infringing on God's domain by serving idolatry. And here, this kind of immorality is just even compounds this concept of jealousy by God. So the zealot is so connected to God that he feels God's anger. He feels God's jealousy. And he therefore functions not in an earthly capacity. He's functioning now as a messenger, an agent, as an extension of God, feeling what God feels. That's the highest level. If you don't feel that, and you're doing it for ulterior motives, then you're taking into your hands a law that doesn't apply. And you're doing something that's 100% wrong. It's murder. Because there is no earthly... there is no earthly death penalty. It's only a heavenly. But if you can get so close to God, right, then you are meeting out the heavenly death penalty, not the earthly death penalty. That's the level. If you're not that close, and you're doing it for any other ulterior motive, right, then you're a murderer. So Pinchas, God, and then the other tribes said, Pinchas is a murderer. Killed a Nasi b'Yisrael. He killed the head of a tribe. Because they suspected that his motives weren't pure. But God testified that his motives were 100% pure. Therefore, when a person has that tremendous bond, he bonds with God, where he can feel the pain, kibiyachol, of the Rabbanu Shalom, and act upon it as God's agent, as if I'm an extension of God, then what comes from that? That's what becomes real. He becomes an extension, an agent of God. So that's why he gets two brisos. A bris means a covenant, but it means a bond. Pinchas bonded himself to me in two ways. And because of that, the result was that those bonds became real. He created the bond, and now the bond continues in two ways. What did he do? First he did was, he felt what I feel. He connected himself to me where he became part of me. For that, he gets the bond of shalom. Shalom means perfection. No individual anything in this world is perfect. Only God's perfect. How do we reach perfection? By connecting to God. How do we connect to God? First, you have to connect to the creation of God. Because God is one. So if you're staggered and scattered and disjointed, you can't have a connection to God. So you need shalom. That's why it says that God didn't find a vessel that could give blessing to the Jewish people, because all blessing comes from having a connection to God. What is a blessing? A blessing is that all of that which is godly transfers to you. That's blessing. But it'll only transfer to you if you have a connection to God. So you need a connection to God. You need shalom. You need perfection. You need unity. When there's unity here, you can be unified with God. So what did Pinchas accomplish by bonding with God? Brisi shalom. Now he's going to have that shalom, that shlemus of attaching, being able to attach to God by having that covenant and that bond that's affected by shalom, by total unity. It's interesting From here we learn that shalom, which means complete, the vav in shalom is broken. That even when he's a kohen, and he finds out that he's not really a kohen, he's a desecrated kohen. His mother was a divorcee who married his father, a kohen, and he's a cholim. But if he finds that out later in life, and he's made a lot of sacrifices in the temple, so the halacha is that whatever he did was okay. In other words, even though he's not perfect, but the perfection is going to be given to him as if he was. From that point on, it could be it doesn't help. But what happened retroactively is going to be okay. In other words, he's going to be imperfect, but still judged perfect. How do you do that? When you don't look at your own perfection, when you're totally negated to God, then you get... then you get perfection by being connected to God, who's perfect. So here we see a level of connection, of total subjugation and negation to God, where that perfection flows into, that's the bris, that's the covenant of peace. Peace meaning harmony, perfection, that's the concept of peace. And so that was the first reward. The second reward was, the second thing he did, aside from being able to totally bond himself with God and feel what God feels and act as an agent, by doing this, he atoned for the Jewish people. How so? Whenever there is judgment above, right, then there's no judgment down here. But if the judgment is done down here, then it takes away the judgment above. Now the judgment down here is very limited. Judgment above is spiritual, very unlimited. So what Pinchas did is, he took God's judgment that should have affected the Jewish people and brought it down into this world, contained it, where only killing these two people was enough. Otherwise, the entire Jewish people were going to suffer. So he atoned for the Jewish people. He, therefore, automatically became a Kohen. What's the Kohen's job? To atone for the Jewish people. The Kohen is so connected to God that he is the one who intermediates between the Jewish people and God. He's the shliach, he's the agent of the Jewish people and the agent of God. That's interesting. God gives Pinchas shalom so he can connect him to God by having that shalom, which is the kli, the vessel, for getting that bracha from God, meaning to connect to God. And he gives him kahuna, where he can now connect to the Jewish people. Because in order for there to be perfection and peace, you have to be connected on both sides, to the Jewish people and to the Rabban Shalom. So a Kohen is God's messenger to the Jewish people and the Jewish people's messenger to God. When you want to give something to God, give it to the Kohen. The Kohen is that intermediate. And therefore, there's kapara. Therefore, there's atonement. Because whenever there is justice down here, then the justice above goes away, because that the justice, the heavenly justice, is contained within that physical justice. So now you understand why it says bedinhu shikavu scharo. It's not just the reward that he got. Look, you're a good boy, you did something good, I'm going to give you a present. The reward here was the manifestation, the physical manifestation of what he did. He connected himself to God, therefore he was given shalom, which enabled him to continue that connection. He connected himself to the Jewish people and atoned for them, therefore he was given kahuna to be that atoner on an infinite, eternal basis. That's what the Medrash means, bedinhu she yikabel scharo. And this, with this, you can understand the connection between kahuna and shalom. What was the mid of Aaron HaKohen? Ohev shalom, rodev shalom, ohev esabrios umakarvin l'torah. The midah of kahuna, which is being the servant, the one who's oved, eved, is a servant. Avoda is service. The Kohen negates himself to God, subjugates himself to God through service, which is sacrifices, whatever. And in that way, he atones for the Jewish people. He becomes an agent of God. And what he does down here takes away that infinite and boundless judgment above. It becomes bounded and limited down here. So that's the kapara. The kapara can be done in a very limited fashion and take care of the unlimited judgment that's above. So that's the midah of Shalom. That's why the Anani HaKavod, the clouds of glory, right, which represent God's honor, came in the schus of Aaron HaKohen. Because kahuna, shlemus, perfection, and the honor of God all go together. So Pinchas was able to acquire that midah of Shalom and kahuna on his own through the action of bonding with God, feeling what God felt, doing what God should have done, except he did it in a very limited fashion in this world and took away the unlimited judgment of the spiritual world. Yes.
What is the meaning of the broken vow?
The broken vow is like this. It says shalom, which means also has the word shalem in it, right? Perfect, complete. The fact that the vav is broken symbolizes that even if the person's not complete, we're going to consider him like he's complete. So the Gemara learns from here that if you have a Kohen who is making sacrifices for years, and then one day he finds out his mother was a divorcee, he's not really a Kohen. Because when a Kohen marries a divorcee or some other woman he's not allowed to marry, so his children become halalim. They are divested of their kahuna. They're a regular Jew. Not possible, just not Kohan. So really it comes out retroactively, all the sacrifices he made were invalid. Torah says no. Whatever he made up until that point, we're going to consider okay. Sacrifice okay. The people fulfilled their obligation. Even though he wasn't complete, we're going to consider him complete. How do you get such a perfection when the perfection is not dependent on you? When your perfection comes by being bonded with God, then it doesn't make a difference what you are specifically. You're bonded with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. You get his perfection. So since that's a function of that, it's also interesting that Pinchas brought with him to the kahuna an extra Magnus kahuna. That was the Zroa L'Chayayim Keva. When you slaughter a secular animal for meat, the butcher shop, so you have to give the forearm and the cheeks and the with the tongue and the cave of the maw, the stomach, to the Kohen. It was, he could eat it. What's it called? It was part of his parnasa. Just like you give truma, mice, or whatever. What's the difference between them? Truma, mice, or all these things, when they grow with holiness. And by taking off the truma and the mice, you are utilizing what potentially they had from the time that they grew. But a secular animal has no holiness. And therefore, if you don't take off these three things, the animal still is edible. There is taking something secular and making it holy, as opposed to something holy and directing it to the Kohen. Pinchas added another dimension to the kahuna. Up until Pinchas, the kahuna was, whatever was earthly holy, was directed towards the Kohen. Pinchas took something that was not a halacha. There was no halacha that he had to kill that person. Right? Really, it's God's domain in killing the person who did the sin that he did, of living with this non-Jewish woman publicly. Right? What he did was take over God's position. So he made something into a halacha that wasn't a halacha. Right? He created a halacha. Same thing over here. You can create holiness from something that's totally secular. This animal wasn't. It was a secular animal. But now the parts that that Pinchas was involved in, right? What was it? The arm that he used to spear them through. And what's it called? He davened that he should be successful with his mouth, and he speared them through the stomach. So those are the three parts that that the Kohanim get because of what Pinchas did. Right, the cheeks, which were the tongue, and the forearm, and the stomach.
So why are we allowed to even eat those things?
Because the meat doesn't become usher to a Jew. You have to give it to a Kohen. And Shiloh, whether you have to give it to the Kohen only in Eretz Israel or even in Chutz Laretz. I think what they do, the halacha is, it only applies to an animal that's owned completely by a Jew. But if a Kohen is a partner in the animal, then you don't have to give it to a Kohen. Mm-hmm. So I think what they do is they make Kohanim partners in the slaughterhouses. Mm-hmm. To make it that they, because what's a Kohen going to do with these things today?